With me on the line is Davina Montgomery, who is the editor of Geelong Business News, and she's agreed to come on to the program 1 hour early, which is much appreciated to allow us to facilitate this forum after 10. Davina, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Oh, fantastic, Mitch. Great to be speaking to you.
Well, it's an exciting day when early voting finally opens and people can finally go to the ballot box, particularly when, as we keep saying, we feel like we've been campaigning since back at the start of the year, and if not, late last year. We were just in full-on campaigning mode.
You know, Mitch, some days you just feel older than others, and today I keep thinking this morning, I just went, wow, I remember when there used to be a six-week campaign.
Yeah.
And it's been a while.
I tell you what, though, I just wonder if the government might wish that there was a six-week campaign or some sort of longer campaign, because it seems like they're building momentum. And their biggest enemy, it seems, is time, because that news poll came out today that says that they're now only 2 points behind. So it's a lot closer than it was. And it seems like Bill Shorten's perhaps not performing quite as well as Scott Morrison on the campaign trail. And a lot of media outlets are saying that, not just me. So I just wonder if maybe they had a bit longer, they might be a little bit more confident, but they're not. Voting starts today, and that is why I think Bill Shorten will probably get over the line still.
Look, it certainly feels that way, Mitch. I mean, as we know, we saw this with Brexit, we saw this with the presidential election in the United States. Polling is not what it once was. It doesn't seem to sit very closely with where the electorate is, and not just here in Australia, but certainly around the world. That said, yeah, look, it's hard to see a result that Bill Shorten won't be winging his way to the Governor-General and accepting the position of Prime Minister. But, you know, anything can happen in elections, Mitch. Anything can happen. And I think it's quite typical, and I think fairly expected, that as we get close to the polling date, the numbers do tighten up. And I think that's just a reflection of people perhaps being, a little bit more thoughtful about what they will actually do, rather than it just being, oh, at some point we have to vote. No, I wouldn't vote for those guys. I'd vote for these guys over here. Whereas now it's actually a reality. We are voting for one party or another, not necessarily one Prime Minister, although wouldn't it be nice to think that maybe whoever is the next Prime Minister actually gets to stay the next Prime Minister?
Yeah, you'd think so. The parties both say that they've made reforms to the system so that can be facilitated to make it harder to remove prime ministers, but you just don't know, because at the end of the day, if the prime minister's just not any good, maybe it's for the best that they get removed. I was just thinking about this last night. You know, was it a mistake to get rid of Malcolm Turnbull? I mean, he didn't run a very good campaign in 2016. He didn't seem very comfortable with voters. His biggest trick was appearing on public transport, and I think that was about it. Whereas at least Scott Morrison seems to connect more with people.
Yeah, look, I think the issue, Mitch, is that you have... I think Scott Morrison's doing a fantastic job in opposition. And I don't necessarily think Bill Shorten's doing a particularly bad job either, to be honest. I think if we don't have to look back too far to see some really, really appalling campaigns that have been run, very, very poor political performing and just completely disconnected with who people are. I mean, remember that disastrous Abbott-Hocking budget. Talk about, failure to read the electorate. So I think, people are a bit more savvy now. I think the parties are a little bit more savvy now. A lot of that, I think, is coming back to listening to what people are actually saying. And I think, if we're looking at something like the Turnbull and Morrison situation, I mean, the reason that Malcolm Turnbull went down is because he lost everything that had made him popular with voters in the first place. He was the progressive liberal that was going to be strong on the economy and strong on climate change. And what happened? You know, he caved to the hard right and lost his sense of identity, and that's suicide in politics.
Now, people are saying that this campaign's been very boring and not inspiring, but now, as I've followed quite a few campaigns going back a fair while, a few years, at least over a decade, I can't remember any campaign where people have said, wow, this campaign is super inspiring and it's amazing. When was the last time you remember people saying, wow, this campaign is really amazing and super inspiring?
It was Kevin 07.
I thought you were going to say that.
We've had inspiring. It doesn't necessarily all work out well. I mean, there have been very inspiring campaigns. Bob Hawke was famous for being able to speak to the heart of people and to speak to people, I think, in their own homes, and that makes a big difference. Bob Hawke, prior to him, of course, was very good at it as well. Mm. There are a few who do understand statesmanship. I'm not going to drag Kevin Rudd into that mould, but certainly a very clever campaigner and a very clever campaign at the time. I don't know that we need super inspiring campaigns. Don't we need a government that will just... I want to forget about government. I don't want to have to think about them all the time, and I'm sure I'm not alone. I think they need to be just getting on with the job, and maybe that is what is happening. Maybe we are hearing or seeing that our politicians are listening to us and saying, you know what, mate, we've got better things to do with our days than worry about what you lot are up to. Can you just go on and get on with your job so we can get on with ours?
Oh dear, I've just had a breaking news story. This is not connected to the election. An IT problem is causing huge chaos at all Australian international airports.
Yes, so if you're on the way to the airport and you haven't heard the news, I'm sure that you're logging on and listening to the Pulse today. Mm. Absolutely check in with your airline. It is affecting all airports. It looks like a fairly disastrous situation. No other news other than that, Mitch. I'm the same with you. I just got the headline through and just went, oh dear.
It says here Australian Border Force. So I assume domestic flights would be okay. I assume it's more of an international issue, but seems to be some delays with processing people's passports.
Yeah, I think you'd always want to check, though, because you don't know what happens in airport, you know, in airport processes. So anywhere that there's a delay can often have domino effects. So always worth checking. Just to see what's going on.
These systems outages seem to happen quite a fair bit, and always on the news you see queues snaking out the door, people lining up to be manually checked in with pen and paper. It's unbelievable. You just forget how dependent we are on technology in this day and age.
Yeah, of course. And again, you know, things are very complex. These systems are very complex. We've asked them to do very complex things, and there is no thing as a, you know, infallible system. And the more complex that we add into anything, the harder it gets. You know, it's a little bit like trying to sit there and explain the both parties' position on Australian tax law. You know, these sort of things are not easily done anymore. And of course, things are going to go awry. And I think that's certainly what we see in all of these big systems as well.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're trying to get on a plane today, I think.
So today's the Corio Candidates Forum. So just to update people on who's confirmed and who's not, Richard Marles is coming, and also Desmond Sandborn from the United Australia Party. So that's going to be an interesting clash, given what Richard's been posting about Clive Palmer. In fact, all Labor MPs have been posting stuff up about Clive Palmer. He doesn't pay his workers, etc. That's what they've been saying over the course of the weekend. So let's see that issue come to a head today. But regretfully, I haven't heard back from the Liberal candidate for Corio. I've tried to contact him by three different methods, and I can see that he's received each one of them, but no response. So that's disappointing, because even if you can't make it, I would have thought an apology would be good. The Greens are also an apology, so worst case scenario, it'll just be Richard versus Clive Palmer's candidate battling it out after 10 o'clock.
Look, it really doesn't feel like there's going to be much of a contest in the seat of Corio, does it, Mitch?
No.
I think it's been away for quite some time. Just the nature of what it is. I mean, it's sitting in a pretty safe Labor seat. You know, the Labor campaign has been strong for the last 6 months or so. You know, I think that Richard's savvy enough politician to realise that come after Election Day, the chances are he's going to have a pretty big job to do. I think we can, you know, we all firmly would expect that if the Labor Party were to form government, that Richard Marles would be sitting on the front bench. So, you know, I think he'll be playing a footy card today and just saying we're going to take it one week at a time, but I think he'd be quietly confident.
And I think it is a shame. I said sadly that it's not a contest in Corio, not because I don't like Richard Marles. He's been coming in here since I started back in 2014, and I think he's a really good voice in the Labor Party, and I like the way that he communicates and brings economic issues to the table and talks more about those sort of things. However, I think people in Corio would look on in what's going on in Corangamite and see, for example, Chloe Shorten came down to Corangamite and was visiting and talking to people in Drysdale. And I think some people would like to have a bit of the action there in Corio, where they had direct access to these sort of big decision makers, where they could talk about the issues and tell them what's on their mind. And, you know, let's have a look at these projects like the Northern Arc.
Absolutely, Mitch. And you know what? Politics is better when there's a contest. It absolutely is, and it, you know, doesn't necessarily bring out the best in politicians or in people around them, certainly even voters as well, but it does make politics better. It puts the challenge in there. It shines a spotlight on areas that do need attention. And there are, you know, there are areas in parts of Geelong that are as disadvantaged, where, you know, people are experiencing disadvantage at rates seen as bad as anywhere in the country. Mm. So we do need that attention. You know, politicians will walk around all day talking about a fair go for Australians and how important fairness is and equity is. And we need that spotlight down here. And that's, you know, like we said, there's probably a limit to what Richard Marles can do, given that you know, given that there isn't a lot of political attention on his seat, perhaps if he can push his way into a ministry situation, then we start to get someone with a bit of clout and maybe something can happen.
If you were sitting in the audience from 10 o'clock today, what would you ask?
Oh, that's exactly what I'd be asking, Mitch.
Why we don't get more for the North? Why is there so much disadvantage?
And not why don't we get more, but what would a Labor government do?
Yeah.
Can you give us 3 points that the Labor government would do to address generational disadvantage in the North, to bring more jobs growth, to bring more training, and to bring a spotlight further on all of the social issues that is nothing to do with the North, that is absolutely to do with all of us?
Yeah, I like that. I think that gets to the nub of the issue. So I might even read out that question from you and just see what the response is, because I think that's getting down to the central point. But let's see what happens. But at the moment, Richard Miles is on $1.01 to win that seat, and the Liberal Party on $11. And then from there, I think the Greens got to $24 or so. And yeah, not much happens after that.
But as we know, Mitch, the only way to win when you bet is not to bet at all. So
that's true.
I think with interest. And
very true. Incidentally, in Corangamite, Sarah Henderson's odds were $6 to win that seat last weekend. Now they've come into $2.75. So a lot of late money coming on for Sarah.
Yeah. So Corangamite is the polar opposite, isn't it? Corangamite's one of those seats that both parties really feel they have a shot at and both parties are pretty nervous about. So, of course, we are going to see the leaders down here. We're going to see a lot of attention on both sides. We're going to see some pretty hard campaigning. And, you know, I know the pre-poll is open and the election is on and a lot of us will be going open to the over to pre-poll pretty soon. But, you know, I think we've still got some announcements to come for Corangamite, because they both really want. That's one of the bellwether seats, and it's one that they both really want. And that's, you know, that's always a good position to be in if you've got things that want to be funded.
Sure.
But to be perfectly honest, I'm really looking for governments and for leaders who are going to be talking about more than individual projects for individual areas. I think that we've got some amazing opportunities in Australia and some fundamental challenges. And I'm looking for a party that is going to turn around and give us some longevity. And I haven't heard a lot about that from either side, to be honest, and certainly from the two leaders. You know, I'm not going to discount the minor parties. They're an important voice, particularly in our Senate. But, you know, I think some of them, and I think we can guess who, are probably getting way too much voice, considering that the amount of impact that they may or may not have in the next parliament. But I just really want to have a look and sort of say, how can we make the best of what is good about our country, and how can we actually start to really address some of the fundamental social issues that are going on, and some of the underlying economic issues as well.
Yeah, all very good points there. So let's wait and see. But you do get the sense from talking to both Sarah and Libby that there's a lot of desperation there. They're under immense pressure to either win or retain that seat. So I don't envy them. It's not a very, very tough contest.
I think they're both highly respected candidates
they are.
Within their parties, which is fantastic in itself. When we've got two strong, intelligent, highly capable women going head-to-head in one of the most high, now, at this moment, one of the most high-profile seats in the country. And, you know, we talk about wanting to make moves in equity and look at gender diversity and diversity in general in politics, and there it is, it's on our doorstep. So that's something to be thankful and proud of.
There was a story in news.com.au today, I don't know if you saw it, about Libby Coker and Chloe Shorten and how they felt some sort of connection with each other back in the 2016 campaign and were very close, and that's why Chloe Shorten came down to Drysdale this weekend. She wanted to support Libby, and it was just a beautiful story about, I suppose, the people behind it, and just again reminding everyone that there are real people running for the seat there, and we're all real people.
Absolutely. And, you know, Mitch, for those of us who absorb politics through the newspapers and through particularly some TV channels, you know, we can forget that, and it is really easy to forget that because that's the way it is talked about. You know, anyone who's been around politics and in the inner circle around politics knows that when the cameras are off, when there isn't a microphone in front, a whole lot of politicians will actually very comfortably and very happily sit down with their good friends on the other side of the political divide and have a chat and catch up, and they're not necessarily mates with the people on their own side, and they will very often, almost always, have mates on the other side as well. They know that they're people. I think that we do forget it, and it's kind of to our detriment that we don't want more of that, I think. Or maybe we do. Maybe we do want more of that. I certainly love to see who people are, what they really are about, how they feel about issues fundamentally, you know, not necessarily expecting them to be able to swing election results on that or to be able to bring policy into place. But I think it's a fantastic thing when we understand what motivates people, what their background is, because, hey, if we have a parliament that looks a bit more like what the rest of us are like out here in terms of the diversity, in terms of how different we are and the different views, then aren't we going to get a better parliament?
I would have thought so. Now, to change tack slightly, the front cover of today's local paper, the Geelong Advertiser, says High Noon for High Street. The councillors apparently are going to be voting to work out which approach they should take. And from what I understand, there was heavy pressure from the TAC, and some of the funding, I think, was contingent on the bike lanes going down High Street. But obviously, being the council's jurisdiction, they have the final say.
Yeah, look... It's an interesting one, isn't it? There's so much angst about this project. And it does feel like any time we start talking about things like bike lanes and cars, that it really does get people's emotions up. And isn't that a shame? You know, you look at places in the world like, you know, Amsterdam and a lot of the cities, Denmark in Europe, where people just cycle. There isn't a bit of lycra in sight. People just use it because it's a really good way to get around and it makes sense. You know, Geelong is getting busier. I'm sitting out here. I can see, you know, car parks along the side of the road are completely full. The traffic is full. I know High Street gets very busy. Not all the time, of course. It ebbs and flows across the day, as everywhere else does. But don't we want to encourage people to be on bicycles safely and to not have that clash constantly between cars and bikes, which purely is about urban design? I mean, if you're going to put a bike lane next to a car lane and expect everyone to get along, well, you're just kidding yourself. It's not going to happen. So, you know, I don't really mind how they go about it. I think as a driver, it's my responsibility to be mindful of everyone on the road and to respect them. But I don't care how they get along. It's their choice about how they want to get around. And it's all of our job to respect the other people around us.
I was watching a video and thought of you. It was a video over the weekend, I think it was put up by our good friends at the Sustainable Hour on the Pulse, and it was someone riding a bike in Amsterdam, and they were completely separate from the other traffic and cars,
yeah,
and they
yeah.
could cut through, and they were basically showing how people ride their bikes to the railway station. So the person rode their bikes, and then it looked like at the railway station there were hundreds of other bikes all parked there in some sort of facility where you could lock up the bike and keep it safe while you went out and did your thing.
Well, it just feels like common sense, Mitch, and sometimes it feels like we go out of our way to not use our common sense in the way that we do things sometimes. So I would love Geelong to be a city that actually says, you know what, we don't just want to be a smart city, we want to be smart about the way that we do things, and we don't have to do things the way that everyone else does. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the outcome is. I just hope that we can all sort of take a lever off the emotions and just think about the fact that, hey guys, as much as busy as you think it is now, we're only going to get busier, we're all going to be around each other more. Take that extra breath and, you know, if you're on a bike, if you're in a car, if you're on High Street, if you're in the centre of town, wherever you are, don't we all just have the right to be able to get around and go about our day? Because no one needs the angst with it, really. At the end of the day, you're just trying to get to where you're going. So I don't know that it does matter so much. I think what does fundamentally matter, though, is that we need to have whatever solution they come up with and however it goes and however it's developed, that we really need to be supporting those traders along that strip there. And that's really important. It's been such a great part of Geelong, being able to go up to Belmont and see the shops up there. And we don't want another Moorabool Street happening in Belmont because of bad decisions that have been made.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens from there. Well, have the final word. Is there an issue on your mind that we haven't got to yet that you'd like to raise?
You know, I don't think there is. To be honest, I'm really just looking forward to seeing how the campaign rolls, but really just to see what happens with how people are responding to those big announcements in their area, because I think we've kind of got fatigue of big announcements. The Prime Minister and the Opposition Leader are both over in Perth today announcing, you know, hundreds of millions and billions of dollars worth of announcements. It's happening here. I kind of think we've got money fatigue, which is a really odd thing to say. There's these constant announcements that come forward right this close to the election. You're like, really? I just want to know that you're going to get on and do the job. And, you know, if you can convince me of that, then you'll probably get my vote. But at the moment, I don't know. I'm swinging around, I think, Mitch.
Yeah, I think you make a fair point there. You hear them rattling off the money, $50 million for this, $500 million for this, $250
million. But what do they stand
for? And, yeah, I think people do... No one really gets an appreciation for how much money that really is and what it really means, because it's just money. And it doesn't actually necessarily mean that it gets delivered. You can put the money up, but you've then actually got to implement, don't you?
Yeah, there is, Mitch. And look, you know... We don't know what's going to happen. None of us have a crystal ball. In the next 4 years, there's a lot happening in the global economy, and Australia's had such a such a blessed run in a lot of ways, and I think a lot of that being to do with good management, oddly enough, from both sides. So they should, they can probably both take a bit of credit for it. But I'd like to know that, you know, that I think we're putting some of our bickies aside for whatever may come, and, you know, maybe becoming one of those countries that has a long-term sustainable economy, because, again, it wasn't that long ago that Australia certainly didn't.
Yep. Well said, Davina. Thank you very much for being on the program, and let's catch up in a couple of weeks' time, which I think will be almost just before polling day. Yeah, about a week before. So that'll be exciting.
Yeah, we'll have a fantastic forum, Mitch. Enjoy it. It should be fun.
Thank you very much. Davina Montgomery there, the editor of Geelong Business News, joining us on 94.7 The Pulse.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.